podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum. For further information, please go to www.rafmuseum.org/podcasts. The story of the TSR-2. Sydney Cam, the designer of many aircraft, including the Hawker Hurricane, once commented that all modern aircraft have four dimensions: span, length, height, and politics. TSR-2 simply got the first three right. Throughout the history of Britain's aircraft industry, there are stories of projects that failed to get off the page, and those that scarcely got off the ground before being cancelled. The British Aircraft Corporation, TSR-2, is perhaps the most controversial. The TSR stands for Tactical Strike and Reconnaissance, the dual role envisaged for the aircraft, an intended replacement for the Canberra. There is no documented reason for the aircraft being numbered 2, but this may be because it was considered to be a successor to the Canberra, or because it had high-speed capability at twice the speed of sound. TSR-2's cancellation seemed, at the time, to be a symbol of the Wilson government's attitude to the British aircraft industry. It was certainly the first evidence of a major change in the way military aircraft were selected and built for the Royal Air Force. After TSR-2, RAF aircraft were either bought direct from the United States or designed and built by international collaboration. This was the development process on projects like the Jaguar, the Tornado, and the Eurofighter Typhoon. One important aspect of these collaborative projects is that they involved sales to other air forces. The TSR-2 project was reliant on just such a plan. The aircraft was to be sold to the Royal Australian Air Force. The issues behind the cancellation were far more complicated than simple party politics. The TSR-2 was designed and failed in a difficult political environment and under challenging economic circumstances. The tactical strike and reconnaissance role was devised against the background of a divided Europe and the threat of nuclear war. Surface-to-air missiles, or SAMs, threatened high-flying, unarmed reconnaissance aircraft like the Canberra and bombers such as the Vulcan. It was believed that the only way to gain air superiority was by destroying the SAM sites through a high-speed attack at low level. Inter-surface tension between the Royal Navy and the RAF clouded the development. The Blackburn Buccaneer was regarded by the Navy and by many of its pilots as an aircraft which could suit the RAF's needs, but ultimately the specification for the new aircraft, General Operational Requirement 339, included roles which couldn't possibly be fulfilled by the Buccaneer. General Operational Requirement 339 specified that the aircraft should be able to deliver both conventional and nuclear weapons, as well as providing electronic and photo reconnaissance. It would also need to operate at high and low level and high and low speed from ordinary runways as well as temporary runways and even grass strips. Many designs were submitted, and in January 1959 the project was given the go-ahead, with Vickers Armstrong and English Electric selected to work together. The eventual design was very similar to English Electric's initial proposal. The TSR-2 was a distinctly shaped aircraft, with a fuselage just over 27 metres long, but with a relatively small platform. The wingspan was 11.27 metres. The power was provided by two Bristol Siddeley Olympus engines, each providing over 30,000 pounds of thrust with reheat. These same aero engines were later used to power the Concorde supersonic airliner, which of course could fly at twice the speed of sound for long periods. The aircraft was also to have a range of 1,000 miles and a payload of 6 1,000-pound bombs, or a nuclear weapon, although the size of the nuclear payload would be limited by the Macmillan government's cap on the maximum size of nuclear ordnance. The project first had to weather the political storm caused by the 1957 Defence White Paper, which proposed widespread changes to Britain's defence, including the abolition of conscription. The paper had also recommended that the aircraft industry should be rationalised. As a result, in 1960, English Electric, the Bristol Aeroplane Company and Vickers Armstrong merged to form the British Aircraft Corporation. Hunting Aircraft also joined BAC. Meanwhile, de Havilland, Blackburn Aircraft and Folland merged with the Hawker-Siddeley group. By the time the TSR-2's design was finalised, the aircraft companies were in the process of completing these mergers. The white paper had also argued that future conflicts would be fought with ground-launched missiles rather than with aircraft, and as a result, projects like the Saunders Roe SR-177 supersonic interceptor and the Avro 730 supersonic bomber were cancelled. So why did the TSR-2 fail? There are many opinions on the subject, but most focus the blame on the politicians who made the final decision to cancel. Some blame the Americans, and some suggest that undue pressure was put on the British government by the Soviet Union. The real story, which may never be entirely known, is one of technical achievement in an environment of political change and administrative confusion. Vickers and English Electric were both separately capable of successfully producing very effective aircraft and doing so quickly. In the case of Vickers, the best-known example is the Valiant. But it had no experience of designing and testing supersonic aircraft. English Electric had successfully developed the Canberra and was particularly effective at designing and testing aircraft in a structured and well-managed process. Its weakness was that it had no integrated manufacturing. This was subcontracted to a different section of the company, and it was also heavily committed to bringing the Lightning into service. It's been argued that the way the TSR-2 project was announced as a 50-50 split between the two companies resulted in a lack of any properly organised project management team. The management for the project came from Vickers, and the flight test crew were from English Electric. The split in organisation, in spite of the fact that the two companies were merging to become BAC, meant that the entire project was split, and the effect of this persisted right through to construction and flight testing. The lengthy gestation period of the TSR-2 also contributed to development problems. As the various operational requirements were modified, including maximum speed and penetration altitude, as well as details of its internal systems, the resulting changes were not always communicated to the whole organisation, so the full implications were often not appreciated until it was sometimes too late to do anything about it. For example, Vickers was not cited on the full cost of the Olympus 22R because they had no awareness of the Ministry of Supply's embodiment loan procedure used for purchasing engines and all other new equipment. In fact, the initial stipulation that the Olympus 22R should be used was not welcomed by Vickers or English Electric. The Olympus had its own development problems, partly because the required speed increased during the specification process. In addition, the Olympus was rated to cope with the original specification provided by English Electric, the P-17A, but not the heavier aircraft which the TSR-2 became. One ground test of an engine in an Avro Falcon ended in a serious fire when a turbine blade broke free and ruptured the fuel tank. As a result, the engines could not be run at beyond 97% of maximum power in order to prevent a recurrence of the problem. Rectifying this fault added to the delays which beset the TSR-2 program. When the physical size of the engine was slightly changed, it made the process of changing an engine much more difficult. In hangar tests, it took an average of 68 hours to change both engines, compared to the published time of less than 10 hours. The undercarriage was also a source of technical difficulty because of the wide range of operating services demanded in the operational requirement. For the first 9 flights, the gear could not be properly retracted until a problem with the mechanism was resolved. The increase in the number of computers in the TSR-2's control system added to the technical complexity and the weight of the aircraft, and of course weight affects performance. As these problems presented themselves and were solved, costs escalated from the estimate of £16 million before the project began to between £240 and £260 million. By December 1964, the predicted cost of TSR-2 was £740 million, of which £160 million had already been spent. The TSR-2 first flew on the 27th of September 1964, despite continuing problems with the engines and the undercarriage. On a flight to Wharton in February of the following year, it flew supersonic for the first and only time. At this point, the political pressure on the project was increasing, mainly because of the spiralling costs and the offer of an alternative aircraft from the United States. The offer was for the sale of the F-111, the Phantom and Hercules at £3.25 million, financed over 7 years at 5.75% interest. The F-111 was, like the TSR-2, still in development at the time. The Phantom package would include Rolls-Royce engines, and so offered some political respite from criticism that British jobs were being sacrificed. The F-111 was a low-level attack aircraft with a variable geometry swing wing, allowing both low and high speed operation. However, the F-111, which was being procured for both the US Navy and US Air Force, would suffer its own delays and technical problems. The main requirement of the TSR-2 was for service in a European theatre, but it was initially intended that some of the development costs would be offset by selling the aircraft to the Royal Australian Air Force. In the early 60s, the Australians were concerned about threats posed by the Indonesian regime of President Sukarno and needed to replace their existing Canberra bombers. The TSR-2 was examined along with the Dassault Mirage 4, the Phantom, the Vigilante and the TFX, the Tactical Fighter Experimental, which was the development name for the F-111. In deciding between the TSR-2 and the TFX, the Australian government and its Air Force service chiefs doubted at one point whether either aircraft would ever be produced. The British Chief of Defence Staff, Lord Louis Mountbatten, was one of the several critics of the TSR-2, and it is possible that his contribution to discussions helped steer the Australians away from purchasing the aircraft. The cost to Australia of the 24 F-111s was higher than originally envisaged. They paid three times more than planned, and the aircraft was delayed for 10 years. To cover the gap, the Royal Australian Air Force leased Phantoms from the United States Navy, and the F-111 is still in service with the Royal Australian Air Force today. The F-111, an example of which was once based in the UK at RAF Lakenheath, can be seen in the National Cold War Exhibition at Cosford, but is no longer in service with the United States Air Force. The general election in 1964 saw the narrow defeat of Alec Douglas Hume's Conservative government, and Labour's Harold Wilson became Prime Minister. The TSR-2 development team feared that the election of Wilson would mean the cancellation of the project. Discussions in Whitehall continued, and it was during these discussions that the F-111 was identified as being a better solution and a viable alternative to persisting with the TSR-2 programme. The Chancellor, James Callaghan, made his budget speech on the 6th of April 1965, announcing the aircraft's cancellation. Earlier that year, in February, the cancellation of the HS-681 jet-powered transport aircraft and the P-1154 supersonic vertical takeoff fighter had been announced. These were replaced with the Lockheed Hercules and the McDonnell Douglas Phantom with Rolls-Royce engines. Hearing of the cancellation, the TSR-2 flight crew attempted to get prototype XR-220 into the air for its first flight, but they were not allowed to do so. The cancellation provoked political outrage in Parliament and bitter disappointment in the aircraft industry. The manner in which it was carried out still seems incredibly brutal. The airframes under construction were physically destroyed and the tooling assemblies were dismantled. Records and even photographs were shredded, as if the intention was that the project should never be resurrected. Ultimately, the cost of the F-111 increased so much that the British order was cancelled. The Buccaneer, as originally proposed by the Royal Navy, was eventually selected as the RAF's low-level strike aircraft. An example can be seen on display in the Bomber Hall at the RAF Museum, Hendon. The TSR-2 and all the other cancelled post-war aircraft projects present what-if questions that cannot be properly answered. However, the TSR-2 project was different in that it marked a sea change in political mood and the way Britain saw itself. After TSR-2, there was no longer any suggestion that the British aircraft industry could go it alone. After TSR-2, there was no national ambition to be self-sufficient in the production of military aircraft. Those who worked on the project viewed it as a superb aircraft with no justification for cancellation on technical grounds. Perhaps the truth is that it was too ambitious for the various roles envisaged for it, and too ambitious for the time. The aircraft was designed and built at the same time as major change was sweeping through the British aircraft industry. Two companies that were not yet fully integrated, with different specialities and different cultures, were equal partners in a project which was very much designed by a committee. The difference in culture and practices between Vickers Armstrong, English Electric and Bristol Siddeley, and its effect on the development of TSR2, cannot be overstated. Even if the project had survived cancellation in 1965, inter-service rivalry between the Royal Navy and the Royal Air Force and continuing political concerns about rapidly escalating costs may well have meant that the aircraft would never have entered service. Although we know that the predictions of the 1957 Defence White Paper were wrong and that strike and reconnaissance aircraft would continue to play a vital role in defence through to the end of the 20th century and beyond, the TSR-2 was probably the wrong aircraft at the wrong time. Unfortunately, there was no Wright aircraft to take the place of TSR-2 until the Tornado came into service in 1982, although the ability to operate on rough terrain would eventually be fulfilled by the Harrier, the first vertical short takeoff and landing aircraft in the Royal Air Force and indeed the world. One of the two surviving TSR-2 airframes, XR-220, which never flew, can be seen at the Royal Air Force Museum in Cosford's Experimental Aircraft Exhibition, a popular exhibit and a tantalising look at what might have been. Thanks for listening to this podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum.